Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the second day, Gimel, B'Tishrei, Parshas Teshuvah, Tzom Gedalia, Ba'aseret Yamei Teshuvah, the fast of Gedalia in the 10 days of repentance, Tafshin Pei Aleph 5781, Monday, 21 September 2020. This is Phantom Nation, podcasting from Israel on the verge of weeks of lockdown. Not a pleasant prospect. Of course, the anti-Bibiites here, who also hate democracy, last night were at it again, mobbing in Paris Square, demanding that he obey them and resign instead of remaining in office, which is the wish of those who voted for him. Of course, the anti-Bibiites blame him for failing to end the Chinese communist plague, when it appears no national leader has been able to do that. Not that the plague has halted the chronic compulsive obsessive aggression against Israel in the halls of the UN. Just last week, another committee and or council has tongue-lashed Israel, in this case for depriving so-called Palestinian women and girls from reaching their potential, or words to that effect. I'll also explain why I truly love news items like this as proof of the immense power of Jewishness to mess up people's minds, to drive so many people to attack on the basis of imaginary Jewish evil that has no basis in truth. I also really enjoy such stories, for they are proof of the Torah, in which the words of the Almighty came out of the anti-Jew mouth of the Gentile sorcerer Bilam, trying to curse the Israelites when what came out was only praise. In passing, we will also mention the late Jewishly ignorant Yitzhak Rabin, who thought Bilam's words were a curse, when the text makes clear the opposite was true. We'll also lament the lack of history in the heads of too many Israelis who have swallowed the fake history of our enemies, that there was a Palestinian people who, when Israel declared independence, who have rights as a nation, when there was no Palestinian people at that time in the past, and therefore none with national rights to anything. As individuals, they have a right to be treated humanely, but that does not include confirming them in their fantasy life of being the real, authentic, prehistoric owners of this country. We will also consider the mishigas, that's craziness, of the modern academy's educators following the demands of their, by definition, uneducated students. And we'll get started after the following messages from Israel News Talk Radio.
Israel is located in one of the most volatile areas in the world. Israel is an island of stability in a sea of war and unrest. In the midst of this turmoil, Israel stands out as a beacon of order and human progress. Each week we update you on what's happening in this, the Jewish state, a true light unto the nations. This is Jay Shapiro. Join me every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the second day, Gimel B'Tishrei, Parashas Teshuvah, Tzom Gedalia, Ba'aseret Yamei Teshuvah, the 10 days of repentance, Tafshin Pei Aleph, 5781, Monday, 21 September 2020. This is Phantom Nation, podcasting from the Promised Land, home to the one and only Jewish people, whose religion is unique in human history. We are as old as the pyramids. Well, not quite. It's a myth that the seed of Jacob Israel built the pyramids. Read the Bible. They were tasked with making bricks, not pyramids. Pyramids were built by men used as mindless beasts of burden, but the Egyptians had the brains to use the Jews as craftsmen. More accurately, we are as old, if not the pyramids, than pharaonic Egypt, which sank into the memory banks of history long ago, its culture, its religion. Who practices any more the religion of the pharaohs that oppressed us?
Likewise, we were taken captive to Babylonia, not to be used as menial slaves, but in order to have the locals benefit from our culture. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, and Mordechai were standouts in Babylonian society. Daniel, like Joseph in Egypt, like Henry Kissinger, came like an advisor to the god king. Today, the Babylonians and their religion are no more. Likewise, the Zoroastrian Persians, who had a culture that plotted genocide against the Jews throughout their empire, they too are long gone. And here we are back in our ancient homeland, resurrected by us. No Balestinians had anything to do with the rebirth of this land. We are world leaders in science, medicine, and technology. Those who deny the existence of the God of Israel would benefit from contemplating the history of the Jewish people, which is amazingly unique for its survival. When so many other peoples and religious cultures we lived among, contributed to and suffered from, are no longer around. Not that this is an idea unique to yours truly. It's told that the most powerful French king, Louis XIV, Louis XIV, asked the number one philosopher of the generation in France. Every French generation has a favorite philosopher. And this was Blaise Pascal. He asked him if he could prove the existence of God, and Pascal answered, "Why, yes, Your Majesty, the Jews. The Jews, Your Majesty." And by that, he was referring to our immortality in the face of chronic abuse. And that's why I had to smile, and not for the first time, as news came out of the United Nations last Friday that the United Nations Economic and Social Council passed a resolution 43-3 stating that, quote, "Israel remains a major obstacle for Palestinian women and girls with regard to the fulfillment of their rights and their advancement, self-reliance, and integration in the development of their society," close quote. And among the societies voting, countries voting for this language were Iran, Pakistan, Russia. The three that voted against the 43 were the U.S., Canada, and Australia. It was reported that the 2020 agenda for the council includes voting on some 20 issues, one of them being a condemnation of only one nation in the United Nations, and I'll give you three guesses which one. Now, a normal response in Israel to this situation is anger, consternation, but I can't help myself. Such news items make me smile from ear to ear. For this behavior is the realization of the prophecy of the Gentile prophet Bilam, made even before the Israelites crossed over Jordan. From a hilltop in the land of Moab, he gazed down on the children of Israel living in an orderly community, according to laws written in a book, 12 tribes, not warring, but living peacefully with one another. And he said, quote, "This will be a people that dwells alone and not be counted among the nations." The fool and ignoramus, the late Yitzhak Rabin, thought that was a curse when it was the voice of God, which was praising this people for its unique life. And you all know that of the 193 and 194 member states in the UN organization, they all have the opportunity and the right to serve a term on the Security Council, though in practice, one and only one of the states in the organization does not have that opportunity. Guess which one? The nations are grouped in geographical blocks, and each vote votes its representative to sit on the council for a certain term. I think it's 2 years. And since we are in the region of the Middle East, there will be snowballs in Christian hell before the Muslims vote to send Israel to sit on the council to represent the region. So when others are angry at the United Nations for another one of its unique votes against the only Jewish state, I smile. I think it's wonderful. What is wonderful is the display of these goyim walking around in darkness, not one of them capable of seeing the irrationality and dishonesty and hypocrisy and guiltless bullying of Israel that they engage in. It is the spirit of the herd, of the gang, like a Nazi gang of thuggish German boys beating up an old bearded Jew in the street. It's the same behavior, albeit this is nonviolent. It's verbal abuse, not physical, and out of the mouths of diplomats in business suits. Is there not one of these 43 states that has the individuality to see the singling out of Israel like this all the time as absurd? That they take the time to draft such a resolution and send it around and vote on it. They are, of course, paid for every minute of this endeavor. And it's evidence, I think, of their lunacy for the idea that Israel's treatment of Arabs in Judea and Samaria is uniquely poor on the planet. That idea is ridiculous. My research into the UN uncovered the UN General Assembly's first quarter voting. The individual states voted 55,642 times against Israel. That's on average hundreds of times every month. And I say there's something compulsive, obsessive about this behavior by the Goyim, the nations of the world, by their hostility. They inadvertently salute the power of Jewishness that affects their behavior so profoundly. We Jews are their addiction. We are their chronic punching bag. And it is particularly revealing that voting for this resolution were Iran and Pakistan, I think the Saudis too, all of them guilty as Muslim cultures whose Sharia law legalizes the abuse of women. For Islam, I believe, does not recognize women as fully human. They have no souls, I think Islam teaches. This chronic tongue-lashing of Israel by Jew haters in our time is just another strain of age-old Jew hatred that morphs, mutates, and molts from generation to generation, country to country, culture to culture, depending on the circumstances. For example, no one accuses the Jews anymore of poisoning the wells or even killing Jesus, but they do accuse the Jews of having stolen Palestine from the Palestinians, which has become the core curriculum in erstwhile serious universities. Now, the very institution of the university came out of the medieval Catholic monastery, and so perhaps it's not surprising that some universities these days allow students to hold an Israeli apartheid week. And never mind that, like all anti-Semitic accusations, there's no truth to this slander. There's no apartheid in Israel. This is how people hate Jews in our time. Last week, another one of those ceremonials at the White House, blowing up the significance of the occasion for political gain, there were some 50 anti-Israelite cult groups protesting outside the White House. 50 of them. What a mark of distinction. We in Israel have the power, by our very existence, to drive these protesters to expend time, money, energy, to protest our existence. They are enslaved to this hostility. This power of Israel, of the Jewish people, on mankind is a matter of historical record, and this is more evidence of it. Without the Jews, there would have been no Christian history, no Christian civilization, likewise no Islamic culture. I hesitate to call it Islamic civilization. 50 separate anti-Israel affinity groups showed up because they are so enslaved. They are incapable of opening their eyes to the plight, for example, of the Muslims in communist China, the Uyghurs, literally imprisoned in slave labor camps and browbeaten by their overlords to stop being Muslims and become communists. About this oppression, these 50 anti-Jew clubs are oblivious. In a word, there's a benefit to anti-Jew thinking and behavior. It highlights the power of Jewishness, its effect on humankind that no other religion has. The man, Adolf Hitler, was evil incarnate. His very being was consumed with Jew hatred. It occupied all of his waking hours. Indeed, his aggression in World War II can be seen as his quest to overrun the whole world in order to find and kill every Jew on the planet. And in the process, besides the 6 million he managed to destroy, 54 million other human beings lost their lives. That is how powerful Jewishness is. This is why I smile every time some UN committee, agency, council takes time to tongue-lash the Jewish people as, in this case, uniquely guilty of abusing young girls and women. This behavior is so clearly unfair. Only because Jews are the victims, no one notices. Thank you.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Tamar, she's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yonah. And yes, I can be all of those things, but at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
The return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel was prophesied in the Bible thousands of years ago and is coming true today. Shalom. Join me, Josh Wander, on Israel Unplugged. Listen in as we delve into the spiritual and physical aspects of the Jewish return to Zion. We'll discuss the biblically mandated, historic, and of course practical understandings of this incredible transition from exile to redemption. That's Israel Unplugged, every Monday on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Did you know this psalm and many others were composed by a Jewish shepherd and musician who later became a king? Would you like to know some of the inner meanings of psalms to help you connect with God and strengthen your soul? An exciting and easy-to-read book is now available, which will help you do just that. Software for the Soul, Psalms for Everyone, available on Kindle, Audible, and Amazon.com. Software for the Soul.
Modesty at the beach? It isn't just about body image. It's about feeling good. Modest swimsuits, so we don't get burned by the sun.
So we won't get ogled by strangers.
So we'll feel free to express ourselves without the need to expose ourselves.
Let Marcy Modest help you to cover up what you want, how you want.
Made in Israel.
Visit MarcyModest.com. That's MarseaModest.com.
And get a 10% discount on your first purchase.
So, we just completed the holiday of blowing the shofar, the ram's horn. That calls to mind the ram that Avraham sacrificed on Mount Moriah in place of son Isaac. It is as much a foundational Jewish story as the foundational commandment to Avraham to circumcise himself, his sons, and command his followers to do the same. It is the story of the binding of Isaac that Christianity reworked as its founding narrative. God commanded Avraham to act out a human sacrifice in order to put an end to the practice, to the behavior so common to the human race in Avraham's generation, from the Aztec to the Canaanites who lived down below Mount Moriah on both sides. Human sacrifice, child sacrifice, was normal behavior. And the drama of the binding of Isaac is meant to announce to the world that the God of the Jews is not like all other pagan gods. He's a God of mercy versus the God of Abraham, according to Christians, who with arms crossed presides over the horrible torture death of his son, his only son. An expression, by the way, that repeats three times in the binding of Isaac, an expression Christianity appropriated. And then there is Islam, whose very name means submission and alludes to Ibrahim submitting to the command of Allah to sacrifice his son. Stealing from the Jews the very idea of having a set of commandments with a number attached, not 10, but 5, one of the 5 in Islam is the duty of the believer to make the Hajj, his pilgrimage, to Mecca, at least once in his lifetime, to the place where Ibrahim bound his son Ismail for a sacrifice. In their penetrating wisdom, the sages of the Jewish people chose the Torah readings for the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah we just completed to concern the head of the Jewish people, Avraham, who spent a lifetime wanting a son and not having one, but then having one who he had to expel for his potential fratricide of his half-brother. Some call the expulsion of Ishmael Abraham's second most difficult trial. The first day's reading. And the second day's reading is Avraham's greatest trial, the order not to expel but apparently slay his remaining son, called 3 times his only son, sharpening the point that Ishmael, though his firstborn son, born to his wife's Hamitic handmaiden, was not to be the bearer of Avraham's spirit, but his second son would be, the son of his Semitic wife. Indeed, she was his niece. Avraham lived almost 4,000 years ago, and that we Jews still remember him and ponder his life is more evidence of the power of Jewishness. And it's unfortunate that modern Israel, post-religious Israelis, are so detached from from Jewish history, which has so much to teach about a relationship to the world in our time. Take, for example, the weekly column on Friday in Ma'ariv by Jackie Chugi. He's the Arab Affairs commentator for Galei Tzal Radio. Responding to the ceremonial last week at the White House of commercial relations between Israel and those two teeny tiny Arab so-called nation states, he wanted to know what the Arabs in Judea and Samaria think about it. And so he called up Saeb Arakat, he who believes the Jews had no temples on Har HaBayit. For that reason alone, no Israeli journalist should ever speak to this man, but what can you do? Jackie Chugi and a whole generation of Israelis live with and suffer from the anti-Semitic fantasy that there's a Palestinian nation with rights, and that's because, like Jackie Chugi, they do not know the history of their own state. He wrote in his column, quote, "This week, on the eve of the ceremony at the White House, I wondered in my conversations with Saeb Arakat how the Palestinians had come to where they are today, from being the beloved child of the Arab nation to being the rejected child. In 1947, they were offered a state on half of the land between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea, and today they are offered a quarter of a half. Where did they go wrong?" Close quote. I read that and could only shake my head at the triumph of this generation's socially acceptable way of smearing Jews with guilt, the invention of the Palestinians. In 1947, Jackie Chugi here implicitly believes there was a Palestinian nation, a Palestinian people, a Palestinian community here that made the wrong choice when they said no to that offer. On the contrary, the acknowledged leader here was the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, who had been adamant by 47 for a quarter century that there was no such country as Palestine. And he was right. It was all Syria, whose capital was Damascus, whose king was Faisal of the Hejaz. Haj Amin attended his coronation in 1920. And in 1947, there was still no Palestinian people here calling themselves that, being called that, having an organization with leadership. There was no Palestinian nation as distinctive as other nations known for their unique language, cuisine, religion, occupations, folklore. History of their battles in defense of their beloved ancient homeland. Jackie Chugi overlays his own Western mind upon these essentially tribal people, bounded biologically, tribally to one another, but not by language, religion, culture. And ever since 1947, there has not been a Palestinian nation functioning as a nation. The Palestinian cause is nothing but another fairy tale of persecution by the Jews, with not one eyedropper's worth of truth to this tale. For roughly a biblical generation of 40 years and more, the world has talked of a Palestinian people victimized by the Jews and how to solve the conflict between Israelis and Palestinians, when this is a dishonest perversion of the conflict. In the 1950s, it was not called that. It was called the Arab-Israeli conflict, which, by the way, was also a kind of cover-up, the covering up the essential Islamic hostility to Zionism. As my book lays out the history, in the first biblical generation following the creation of modern Palestine by the League of Nations, the vocabulary of Arab resistance was exclusively religious, since the leader was Haj Amin, recognized as a Muslim cleric. There was no Palestinian nationalist movement ever. Following the birth of Israel, and in the wake of the massive decolonization after World War II of many countries, the nationalistic term Arab-Israeli took hold. That eclipsed the religious lexicon. Then after the Six-Day War, there was a change again. In 1970, the Palestinians made their first appearance in the UN General Assembly document. In this process, Israel has been its own worst enemy by being incapable of demanding its right, as per the League of Nations, to all the land from the river to the sea, because that would be too Jewish, too religious to do so, and secondly, because of the secular post-Zionist goal is getting the Arabs to stop their hatred and become our friends. Denying the Palestinians a state would not work in that direction. Israelis like this want to share the country with the Palestinians, but the other side has never wanted that, because this kind of ecumenical thinking and respect for other people's religious beliefs are simply alien to them. They want it all or nothing. The Quran dictates that the Jews must be oppressed and humiliated. And until Muslims find a way to modify those words, peace with them as Israelis want is not possible. And in the absence of that necessity for peace, Israel could only fortify itself and chip away at the world of lies and fantasies that pass for thinking in the media in Arab culture. What Israel needs is a major investment in producing for television Arabic language programming that tells the truth of the abuse and persecution of the Jewish people in Islamic history, programming that demolishes the fantastic fantasies that the Arab Muslim media puts out, programming that skewers the lies of Palestinian nationalism. Though even before a government could plan and fund such an enterprise, the greatest obstacle would be getting official Israel to recognize the horrendous surrender of the last biblical generation to the Palestinian narrative that Israel has gone along with. 2009, recently elected Prime Minister Netanyahu at Bar-Ilan University respected the need for a Palestinian state. Imagine how different history might have been since then if he had announced that that Israel would no longer play along with the anti-Semitic lie that there was a Palestinian people here whose country we Jews stole from them. The truth, he might have said, is that there never was a Palestinian people and we didn't steal anything. Every sober Jew everywhere knows that Holocaust denial is craziness. Unfortunately, they don't also know that Palestinian nationalism is likewise no less a satanic, anti-Semitic rape of history.
Shanim shelo hergashti shekashe li biladecha lo bemet yadati מה עשית בחייך? חשבתי שאני ילד רגיל כמו כולם, שבעבר שלו יש חור שנעלם. פתאום גיליתי שאתה מאוד חסר, אני לא יודע מה אתה אומר. אף פעם לא דיברת איתי, אף פעם לא מציאותי. אז איפה אתה עכשיו? למה לא בא אליי? אני צריך ממך עצה ועידוד כיוון בחיי. איפה אתה עכשיו? אולי אתה תשמע את קולי, אולי תרגיש את געגוע. התבגרתי ויש לי משפחה, אני בטוח זה ממלא אותך שמחה, והיום מחפש שורשים שיחזקו ברגעים הקשים. חושב אם אני אבא טוב בעיניך, מה לספר לילדיי אודותיך, לקבל אותך מחדש בתוכי.
In a time where feelings have become fact, where rational thought and common sense has disappeared, one man stands above it all.
I'm Howie Sobiker, your political hitman.
Political Hitman airs every Tuesday at 11:59 p.m. North American time, 7 a.m. Israeli time, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On The Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
So, after Rosh Hashanah, when even in a normal year many Israelis would not be going anywhere, we are now entering two or three or even more weeks of lockdown, likely to destroy more businesses, God forbid. And this morning, more than one expert in the media warned that if Israelis do not cooperate, and they seem not to be cooperating, we could be in serious trouble, more than we have known. They were virtually begging people to cooperate. The left, of course, is blaming Netanyahu for failing to end the plague, though other countries, like the UK, are also on the precipice and about to return to a full lockdown, as the virus strikes in many places once again. And as yours truly, I have no opinion about the handling of this evil communist Chinese attack on the world. My opinion, though, is that's what it is. Communists have no sense of humanity. As Karl Marx had no sense of the human personality, and therefore the societies administered, according to his ideas, became monstrosities of inhumanity. All I can do is turn away from this miserable situation and look for better news items in the news, like the one we began with, the latest acting out, almost zombie-like, of the anti-Jew lunacy of the UN. And no less in the news is the item that the U.S. Department of Education in Donald Trump's administration is opening an investigation into Princeton University for its self-confessed, quote, embedded, quote, racism. This is really funny stuff worthy of the dizzy world of a culture in collapse. It seems that on 2 September, Princeton President Christopher Eisgruber wrote a letter to the Princeton community asserting that racism and, quote, the damage it does to people of color remains embedded in the university. And therefore, the university was announcing a new race-based diversity measure for hiring, for fellowships, research funding, and more. In July, hundreds of faculty and administrators also signed a letter calling on Princeton to atone for its, quote, anti-blackness. That letter demanded sabbaticals for minority faculty members only, for removing standard application questions about previous incarcerations and misdemeanors, if any, and acknowledging that the school was built on Native American territory, close quote. And I respond to Eisgruber's groveling letter, stained, I imagine, with tears of guilt for Princeton's embedded racism. The Department of Education has opened its investigation into the university's crime. Isn't this the same racist university that admitted and graduated Obama's wife? Donald Trump has wisely ordered canceling any disrespect in U.S. government offices, any respect for the so-called critical education whose purpose is smearing the U.S. as evil. And if reelected, he's likely to deny funds to universities that teach hatred of the U.S. The left, of course, will protest the squelching of academic freedom when it's nothing of the kind. Universities will be free still to teach whatever they want, but the government has the right to deny them funds for teaching such poison. There's no law requiring the government to fund attacks on the United States of America. It is tragic what is happening to the U.S. via the disintegration of the liberal left side of the political spectrum. It's tragic that Nancy Pelosi is a leader, because this woman is over her head. She shouldn't be in politics. Something is so rotten in American culture that she became as powerful as she has become. She's all emotion, which is a feminine pitfall. This is how she and Hillary and Elizabeth Warren responded to the defeat in 2016. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, and that's how she and they have responded to being deprived of what they believe is rightfully theirs. Donald Trump, the macho billionaire, took it from them. And all that matters is destroying him, even if he has benefited the country. Pelosi denied him money to build a wall to protect the American people because she wants to deny him any success, and she did not care that the country was being penetrated by drugs and white slavers and psychopathic gangsters with a record of murder and horror already. She exhibited no sense of patriotism in this regard, and as such represents the degeneration of the Democratic Party. It's been a process of real lunacy watching Pelosi's partner, Gerald Nadler, my congressman, watch him deny the riots in Portland, claiming it was all Republican fake news. These people have no sense of right and wrong anymore. The Democrat mayors and governors who tolerate the riots and vandalism have, like Hillary, no sense of right and wrong.
All they are is their appetite for power and pursuing their perverse agenda. It remains my opinion that because of their fear, loathing, and envy of Donald Trump, and the flavor of hysteria, that's a sexual disorder, surrounding the Kavanaugh nomination, the slander that he was a sexual predator, all this hints at the base fear of the feminists who grilled him and run the Democratic Party, that Trump will appoint Supreme Court judges who will overturn Roe v. Wade, the throwing of holy water on an intrauterine infanticide, as a woman's right, as per the Constitution of the United States of America, which is nonsense. And now that Ruth Bader Ginsburg has passed, Trump has his chance. For sure, the name of the late justice is today showered with praise, but not from yours truly. Without her and the other two nominal Jews on the court, the U.S. Supreme Court would not have supported the degrading rejection of the Jewish Bible's opposition to sodomy and the with this approval of marriage between people of the same sex. This is how ancient Greece and Rome sank into the catacombs of history. The absence of Jewish sexual morality, which rightly views relations as a holy activity for its goal is the creation of new life. Procreation is the most godlike thing humans do. It's participating in the miracle of life and as such deserves divine respect. Like nuclear energy produced in a reactor, it requires a containment facility. Or watch out, nuclear energy is the most economical and cleanest, but without that containment facility, havoc can be loosed upon the world and has. Likewise, human procreation requires a containment facility too, called holy matrimony, which requires not only a couple desirous of joining their lives, but a third party, a clergyman representing the divine. It's long been known since 1965, and the report by Daniel Patrick Moynihan of Blessed Memory, that at the heart of the social pathologies among African Americans, then called Negroes, is the collapse of the Negro family, and that is but another example of the menace to a society that loses its moral compass in the matter of conjugal relations. In truth, at the same time as the Moynihan report, white Americans were launched upon the so-called sexual revolution made possible by the birth prevention pill, and that led to a cascade of social pathologies, divorce, broken families, the destruction of the taboo on abortion, the taboo on male homosexuality that produced the horrific AIDS epidemic, that produced the magical thinking of gender and fantasy of transgender, and the delusion of so-called sex reassignment surgery. It'll be quite a political catfight in the weeks to come, before the upcoming election, when the post-patriotic Democrats will try to sabotage. This corruption is no less a function of the sexual revolution that elevated to power, such as Hillary and Nancy and Kamala, in the name of empowering women. May the coming year be a better one for us, for everyone. Okay, gotta go. I do three other programs each week for subscribers at www.phantom-nation.com, all for the price of one latte grande at Starbucks. Your money is spent in Judea and Samaria among the Jews who do not think this is Palestinian territory and helps to keep one old man alive. Subscribe for a month, and if at the end you want to cancel, by all means do so, and your subscription will be refunded. You can also buy my book called Phantom Nation, there's no other like it, on Israel's endless war for survival. This week's music was provided by Gavriel, that's a Hebrew for Gabriel, and by Avichai Paz Greenwald. And the music is by Carmina Orr and Hilik Frank. And as usual, we close with Yosef Karduner. Until next time, I'm Shai Ben Tekoa. Vashem ivne beito, Vashem ivne beito, lehasot sham shchinat, shchinat kodsho, Mashiach yavo, oh, Mashiach yavo, oh, letaken et haor. Et ha'olam kulo.
Get the inside news on Israel. At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Morris from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.